Coming up on Fronteras, boxing competes only with soccer as Tijuana's most popular sport. But only recently have women started to enter the ring in significant numbers.
Tijuana has become, in the last couple of years, the second busiest female fight town in the world.
We'll tell you about two sisters who are slugging their way into the spotlight. And can you guess the political affiliation of a legislator just by looking at them? In Texas, it's pretty simple. The Texas Tribune recently posted an analysis of the Texas legislature, and as one may expect, race and party line up.
Yeah, for the most part, you know, the Anglos in the Texas legislature are most likely Republicans. Only a handful of them are Democrats, and only a handful of the minorities, the Hispanics and the Asians and the Hispanics in the Texas legislature, are Republicans.
Those stories, but first the news. This is Fronteras, a journalism project that covers the U.S.-Mexico border region, immigration, and the rising Latino demographic. Fronteras was created through an unprecedented multimedia collaboration among several public radio stations. I'm Crystal Chavez. There's a debate in states such as Arizona, California, and here in Texas about ethnic studies in public schools. Last month, the Texas Board of Education decided to leave it up to local school districts to develop and offer classes such as Mexican American studies or not. But state officials did show some support and put out a call for textbooks. With that decision, News 88.7 education reporter Laura Isensee takes a closer look at Mexican American studies classes in Houston.
Here at Lone Star College, students are prepping for their final exam in Mexican American literature with Professor Tony Diaz.
Is the author Mexican American? Is the work an example of Mexican American literature?
Some of the writing is from the students themselves. Senior Brenda Lozano reads from her journal about her rainbow-colored home in Reynosa, Mexico.
Before I was born, it was white, green, pink, blue, yellow, and finally melon. But that's a common habit in most Mexican homes. You paint your house with as many bright colors as you can.
As she continues, her professor Tony Diaz snaps photos on his iPhone for social media. When she finishes, Diaz reacts to her piece.
When people are scared of Mexican American literature, they're not scared of us overthrowing the government. They're scared of that. People walking into their voice and creating something that's going to inspire others.
This kind of class is likely coming to more Texas high schools. Since November, Diaz has helped lead a campaign that's led to more support for Mexican-American studies from the State Board of Education.
With Texas being as big as it is, this is going to spread like wildfire.
He wants 50 schools teaching Mexican-American studies next fall, and the semester after, 100 schools. Diaz says one reason the board endorsed ethnic studies is sheer demographics. Half of the students in Texas public schools are Hispanic.
They heard the Tejano boots pounding the pavement that day. There were students from the Valley, Houston, San Antonio, El Paso, all over. And, you know, for every one student there, for every one professor, everyone professional, we represented thousands.
Diaz and other supporters managed to win over several Republicans on the partisan state board. One of those Republicans was Donna Bohorich. She represents Northwest Harris County. She says it's important to look at the bigger picture.
I'm all about whatever it takes to get students connected to their education, invested in their education, is very important to me.
Back at Lone Star College, students wish they had something like this sooner. Luis Ochoa graduated from Klein Forest High.
In high school, when we would read like Greek tragedies and Shakespeare plays and stuff like that, like, I was interested in it, and I know a lot of people who weren't, and they were like, this is boring or this is lame or whatever.
Ochoa says he relates more to the writing in this class.
Because a lot of the stuff that they talk about hits home, or like, I've gone through it, or like, especially when they speak about identity and stuff like that, like, I've most definitely, not just as a Mexican-American, but just as a person in general, have gone through some stuff where it's like, you don't really know where you fit.
Another student, Brant Roberts, says this class goes against the culture he grew up with, and that's a good thing.
It fights that racism was kind of like culturally inherent. It was just like really put in there.
Roberts is a bright, red-headed student from Montgomery, a small town near Conroe. Growing up there, he says he was surrounded by xenophobia. Now he's enthralled with Mexican-American authors like Gloria Anzaldúa from the Rio Grande Valley.
this class does a lot, and that's why it could be really beneficial to not just Houston students, but obviously to a lot of Texas students. A lot of white Texas students can gain a lot of perspective. I think it'll help fight racism. That's why I like this class.
Along with Mexican American Studies, the State Board also put out a call for textbooks for African American, Asian American, and Native American studies. From the News 88.7 Education Desk, I'm Laura Eisensee.
Can you guess the political affiliation of a legislator just by looking at them? In Texas, it's pretty simple. Texas Tribune executive editor Ross Ramsey recently posted an analysis of the Texas legislature, and as one may expect, race and party line up.
Yeah, for the most part, you know, the Anglos in the Texas legislature are most likely Republicans. Only a handful of them are Democrats, and only a handful of the minorities, the Hispanics and the Asians and the Hispanics in the Texas legislature, are Republicans.
How drastic are we talking about? What are the numbers?
You know, they're off the top of my head, there are 55 Democrats, there are 95 Republicans. I think it's 7 minorities among the Republicans and 7 Anglos among the Democrats. So it's pretty small numbers.
Why? Why does it work out this way in both chambers?
Well, you know, part of it is redistricting and part of it is voting patterns. So, you know, the voting pattern part is relatively simple. About 70% of Anglos vote most of the time for Republicans. About 65 or 70% of Hispanics vote most of the time for Democrats. About 90% of African Americans vote for Democrats. So those are the voting patterns. And then you overlay that with redistricting. You know, when they draw political maps, they have to follow federal laws that protect minority voters. And part of what that means is that they have to draw districts where minorities have a chance of electing a candidate. When you combine that with their voting tendencies, a district drawn for minorities tends to be a Democratic district.
I was wondering how many Anglo Democrats have been squeezed out. What would the legislature have looked like pre the redistricting we're talking about?
Well, you know, the redistricting, you know, changes every time. And there was a point in the legislature when the Democrats and the Republicans were almost at an even keel. This was right before the 2010 elections turned everything over. There were 74 Democrats, 76 Republicans. And there were a fair number of Anglo Democrats. The number of minorities among Republicans was still relatively small. And after that election, the Republicans won that election, if you'll remember, really strongly. It was Obama's first midterm, so Republicans were stirred up. It was the rise of the Tea Party, and that helped a lot. And they flipped the character of the legislature from sort of a balance to mostly Republican, and that resulting legislature redrew the political maps that we have today.
Why do you think it might matter that we have such a stark divide when it comes to race and ethnicity in the Texas legislature? Why should people care about that?
You know, I think it's just sort of, you know, at this point, in some ways, it's just sort of interesting. And it's interesting that that's the way things have happened. The longer term thing here is that if the voting patterns among the various racial and ethnic groups stay the way they are, and the state continues to grow as it has, you know, more toward a majority Hispanic state. You know, Anglos are no longer a majority. They are a plurality, which means that they're less than 50%. If Hispanics and blacks continue voting for Democrats in the way that they vote now, and if their populations continue to grow, particularly the Latino population, and if those voters begin to vote in the same way that Anglos do, right now their turnout is lower, then you can see where the demographics of the state, as they change, the politics of the state will change with them. And I think that's kind of the longer story here.
Ross Ramsey is executive editor of the Texas Tribune. Chupachanga, it's a block party on the west side of San Antonio. TPR's arts and culture reporter Jack Morgan tells us why it's more than just a block party.
For one thing, art will be a byproduct of the party.
This event is actually centered around large-scale printmaking.
Samantha Lopez is the program coordinator at Sananto Cultural Arts.
The way it works is the artist carves into the woodblocks.
Those woodblocks get some ink and a big roller, and presto, 3x4-foot prints.
2 of those prints will be sold, and then the last print goes to the artist.
In case you've forgotten exactly what Sananto Cultural Arts does.
Sananto Cultural Arts is a 20-year-old arts nonprofit located on the west side of San Antonio.
Known for their bimonthly newspaper El Picasso, as well as their prolific public mural program, they're also getting known for their curiously named block party. There's a reason it's called Chupachanga.
It's the corner of Chupaderas and El Paso Street.
The Pachanga is on Chupadera Street, so it's called the Chupachanga. You got to admit, that makes sense.
The event is free, open to the public, family-friendly, dog-friendly. You don't have to be here the whole time. You can just come in, pop in. We'll also have live music and food. Really just an opportunity for people to come and enjoy what the arts have to offer here on the West Side.
For more on the Chupachanga and other arts and culture news, go to tpr.org. Jack Morgan, Texas Public Radio News.
There's still more Fronteras coming up. Boxing competes only with soccer as Tijuana's most popular sport. But only recently have women started to enter the ring in significant numbers.
Tijuana has become, in the last couple years, the second busiest female fight town in the world.
Two sisters who are slugging their way into the spotlight. That story on Fronteras after the break. This is Fronteras. I'm Crystal Chavez. As diabetes and obesity remain at epidemic levels for the Latino community, a study at the UT Health Science Center San Antonio aims to keep Hispanic children from becoming another member of the statistic pool. TPR's Joey Palacios reports.
The $2.9 million obesity management study is being conducted by the Science Center's Institute for Health Promotion Research. Preliminary research was conducted at a pediatric clinic in New Braunfels. It's now expanding to three clinics under the University Health System. Unlike similar research projects, this one focuses on maintaining current weight instead of losing it.
If we can slow the rate of weight gain as they grow, they'll grow into their body size.
Deborah Pata Medina is the principal investigator of the study. In the U.S., 39% of Latino children between the ages of 2 to 19 are overweight. The non-Hispanic white population is at 28%. Pata Medina says the obesity epidemic is leading to major health complications early in life.
We're seeing children being diagnosed with hypertension, insulin disorders such as diabetes. We really need to curb this.
For 6 months, 230 Hispanic children between the ages of 6 and 11 will be provided information on how to live a healthy lifestyle. Half the kids will receive in-clinic counseling, and the other half will be given additional support from a health educator.
Which includes one family counseling session, face-to-face, and then monthly telephone counseling to the parent, mailed newsletters, and text messages.
The impact will be measured by insulin, glucose, and cholesterol levels, as well as behavioral changes. Funding is coming from the National Institutes of Health. Joey Palacios, Texas Public Radio News.
Experts say a new binational agreement just signed in San Antonio has the potential to solve issues on several fronts, from immigration to water supplies. TPR's Eileen Pace reports the council's leadership predicts sweeping changes under the agreement, which at the macro level could create new business on both sides of the border and achieve broader benefits in global issues relating to immigration, natural resources, and drug trafficking.
Mosaic's mission is to unify the North American effort to promote competitiveness, trade, and innovation that benefits the economies of both countries. Mosaic, or the Mexico-U.S. Entrepreneurship and Innovation Council, was created as a way to implement the high-level economic dialogue that President Obama and Mexican President Enrique Peña Nieto started in May of last year.
We can offer more competitive products and services to the world.
Adriana Tortajada is General Director of Entrepreneurship and Finance at the National Entrepreneurship Institute of Mexico, whose U.S. counterpart would be the Small Business Administration.
We need to, you know, take the advantage of the programs that already are happening at the SBA, at the SBDC centers, women centers. So they have a lot of approaches. So we want to show that together we are stronger, like a region.
The council met in its organizing meeting in San Antonio in April, where the Memorandum of Understanding was signed by representatives of both countries. Emceeing the event was former HUD Secretary and former San Antonio Mayor Henry Cisneros.
I would call to the table at this time the President Enrique Jacob Rocha, President of the Instituto Nacional del Emprendedor Mexicano, the government agency in charge with encouraging entrepreneurship in Mexico, and Deputy Assistant Secretary Caroline Tess, responsible for the Western Hemisphere within the United States. Please join me in welcoming President Enrique Jacob Rocha and Deputy Assistant Secretary Caroline Test to the table.
The State Department's Caroline Test described the agreement as an opportunity to create a regional small business community that spans both sides of the border.
President Obama, one of his goals in his during his administration is to create a small business network of the Americas. And the idea is to take small business development centers, which are located all across the United States, and to link them up with similar centers in Mexico, El Salvador, Peru, and elsewhere in the hemisphere.
Add to that the HLED, or High-Level Economic Dialogue, and it opens the door to what some called an extension of NAFTA. Heidi Gomez, Science and Technology Counselor at the U.S. Embassy in Mexico, says the council was created after taking stock of NAFTA's success.
And when we take a look at what the success story is, it's essentially creating a cross-border production platform between Canada, Mexico, and the United States that's one of the most competitive and successful in the world. And so when we look to the future in terms of where do we want to be in the next 20 years, how do we maintain that regional competitive advantage vis-a-vis other regions of the world, we believe that we need to complement the cross-border production system with a cross-border design and innovation system.
We can solve simultaneously, I believe, a number of problems if we can help the Mexico economy grow.
Thomas Bowles is a renowned nuclear physicist and former fellow of the Los Alamos National Laboratory. He is the Council's technology sector member from the United States. Bowles believes developing a regional economy based around innovation and technology not only will strengthen both nations' abilities to market products and services globally, he says the Mosaic collaboration can also be expected to solve problems common to both countries, including natural resources, drug trafficking, and immigration.
So that people see a future there, and there's a reason to educate their kids to grow up to take these high-paying jobs or better-paying jobs, then we can reduce the pressure on the border, because there's no need to come to the United States to take what usually is some sort of manual labor or fairly low-paying job, if at home you can get a job which is better.
The Council's first U.S. meeting at the University of Texas in San Antonio in April was attended by all 24 Council members, 12 from each country. They discussed specific areas of agreement and began formulating the foundation for the binational economic projects they're going after. Bowles met last week in Washington with the Department of Commerce Economic Development Administration to identify entrepreneurial targets for intelligent manufacturing, an entrepreneurial industry he says will gain traction through Mosaic starting this year. That effort will begin in San Diego. Eileen Pace, Texas Public Radio News.
Only in recent decades has the male-dominated sport of boxing begun to accept the idea of women in the ring. Just 2 years ago, women were finally allowed to box in the Olympic Games. One of the world's hotspots for women's boxing is Tijuana. Frontera's reporter Joe Replegal has this profile of two sisters whose punches are bringing crowds to their feet.
In the blue corner, from Tijuana, Baja California, Kenya, Enriquez!
Kenya Enriquez doesn't need any gimmicks to highlight her boxing talent. No nickname, no flashy costume. She boxes in a white skirt with gold trim and a white sports bra. By round three of this fight, the sports bra was spattered with blood, both hers and her opponent's. By the end, it was covered. One minute and 26 seconds into round seven, Kenya knocked out her opponent, Jolie Blackshear, and became the North American Boxing Federation's junior flyweight champion. Several boxing organizations rank Kenya Enriquez fifth in the world in her weight division, and some observers think she'll soon be number one. Athletics aside, her career seems to be benefiting from growing interest in female boxing among promoters and fans in her hometown.
Tijuana has become, in the last couple of years, the second busiest female fight town in the world, only behind to Buenos Aires, Argentina.
Felipe León covers boxing for FightNews.com.
Female fighting gets a lot of support from the Mexican public. You can find females fighting on primetime Saturday night on the two major Mexican networks, whereas in the United States, they can't even get on TV.
Still, women boxers earn only about half what men earn. A week after Kenya's fight, she crisscrosses one of Tijuana's downtown tourist plazas with a black eye, a souvenir from her fight. Her younger sister Tanya is at her side. They're looking for a trinket vendor who sometimes braids their hair before fights for extra money. They find her, and Tanya sits down on a folding metal chair next to the vendor's stall. She's soon wincing faintly as the braider yanks her long, dark hair into tight cornrows that'll keep it out of her face during the fight. Later that evening, Tanya will have her second bout as a pro. She's only 17.
I started training when I was 12 years old. My friends say I don't look like a boxer. They look at me and think I'm weak. They don't believe me sometimes.
Tanya's promoter has christened her La Niña Sensación, the girl sensation. She's tall and thin. She says she wanted to be a model before she decided on boxing instead. Tanya heads to her fight in a sundress and sandals, something she might wear to meet friends at a mall. The ring is set up under a tent in the parking lot of the Caliente racetrack in Tijuana. Fans sip from giant plastic cups of beer and snack on spicy peanuts during the night's 12 fights. Tanya's dad, who's also her trainer, warms her up in a back room. When it's time, La Niña Sensación steps into the ring in a white robe with sparkly hot pink trim. She's not as polished as her sister. Her jab seems sloppy, and she often forgets to keep her gloves up. But at the end of the four rounds, the judges give her her second win as a pro. Tanya has every intention of following Kenya up the ranks, all the way to the top.
I want
to be world champion like my sister. I want for both of us to be world champions.
No sibling rivalry here. Tanya and Kenya both say they'd never fight each other for the top spot. Reporting from Tijuana, I'm Jill Replogle.
You've been listening to Fronteras, a journalism project that covers the U.S.-Mexico border region, immigration, and the rising Latino demographic. Fronteras is a collaboration of public radio stations along the Southwest. You can find the entire audio for this program and past Fronteras shows online at tpr.org under the Programs tab. If you want to share these stories with your friends on social media, there are one-click buttons to Facebook and Twitter. This theme music was composed by Charanga Cakewalk. I'm Texas Public Radio's Crystal Chavez. Thanks for listening.